Well, peak oil is the point in time when extraction of oil from the earth reaches its highest point and then declines. There are some people who believe we are in that period right now. And then there's some others who say, no, there's an abundance of oil. As a matter of fact, listen to this. About 80 miles off the coast of Louisiana lies a mostly submerged mountain, the top of which is known as Eugene Island. The portion underwater is an eerie-looking, sloping tower jutting up from the depths of the Gulf of Mexico with deep fissures and perpendicular faults which spontaneously spew natural gas. A significant reservoir of crude oil was discovered nearby in the late 60s, and by 1970, a platform named Eugene 330 was busily producing about 15,000 barrels a day of high-quality crude oil. By the late 80s, the platform's production had slipped to less than 4,000 barrels a day and was considered pumped out. Done. Suddenly in 1990, production soared back to 15,000 barrels a day, and the reserves, which had been estimated at 60 million barrels in the 70s, was recalculated at 400 million barrels. Interesting, the measured geological age of the new oil was different than the oil pumped in the 70s. Just what's going on? Analysis of seismic recordings revealed the presence of a deep fault at the base of the Eugene Island Reservoir, which was gushing up a river of oil from some deeper and previously unknown source. Similar results were seen at other Gulf of Mexico oil wells. Similar results were found in the Cook Inlet oil fields in Alaska. Similar results were found in oil fields in Uzbekistan. Similarly, in the Middle East, where oil exploration and extraction have been underway for at least the last 20 years or more, known reserves have doubled. Currently, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 680 billion barrels of Middle East reserve oil. Creating that much oil takes a pile, they say, of dead dinosaurs and fermenting prehistoric plants. Huge. Could there be another source for oil? An intriguing theory now permeating oil company research staffs, suggesting that crude oil may actually be a natural inorganic product, not a stepchild of time and organic material. The theory suggests that there may be huge, yet to be discovered, reserves of oil at depths that dwarf current world estimates. In a moment, two guests on Coast to Coast, Paul Joseph Watson and Alex Jones. We will talk about peak oil, if we're there or not. We'll talk about oil, where it comes from, and we'll talk about what we do for the future right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, two guests tonight, then later on you. You'll join us. Alex Jones is an award-winning documentary filmmaker, political researcher. His news website's Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, at the forefront of the exploding alternative media. Alex is recognized by many as the father of the 9/11 truth movement, being the first to question the government's official story. His newest film is Martial Law, 9/11, Rise of the Police State, detailing the 9/11 revelations. He is one of our guests tonight as we talk about peak oil. Alex, how are you, and welcome back.
George, it is always an honor to be on with you, and I really appreciate your trailblazing courage with one of the biggest programs in the world, allowing Paul and I to come on and bring forward our conclusive evidence that this entire peak oil system has been created by the offspring of the robber barons of the last century, who are engineering this manufactured false scarcity to create a monopoly. We have the evidence in triplicate. And again, thank you for having us on.
All right. And Paul Joseph Watson is the editor and researcher for Alex Jones's PrisonPlanet.com and Prison Planet TV. He has also been documenting the encroachment of what he calls the police state under the guise of government response to crises over the past 5 years. He is currently working on a documentary film with producer Alex Jones that chronicles the development of similar surveillance and authoritarian trends in the United Kingdom in the wake of the London bombings as well. And he is, of course, a researcher, and he is live in England. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hello, George. It's great to be on the air today.
Likewise,
too. Just to reiterate again, as outlined in your introduction, We're here to expose the fact that not only is oil plentiful and even a self-renewing resource in nature, but that the entire peak oil thesis is a deliberately manufactured hoax designed to create the artificial scarcity which Alex mentioned.
All right, and we're going to be talking about all of this tonight. It doesn't necessarily mean we're all endorsing the use of oil. As a matter of fact, I think we need to find alternative fuel sources right away. But the big issue is just what's going on. Alex, there are a number of experts out there who believe in this peak oil theory. This theory, of course, starting in 1956 with the American geophysicist M. King Hubbert, who created this model. How did this model even come about? How did this theory, first of all, start with these geophysicists and scientists?
Well, George, that's an excellent question. We have been doing research on peak oil for a decade because I studied the Bilderberg Group and then its U.S. arm, the Council on Foreign Relations, and they have a think tank in Rome called the Club of Rome of elite environmentalists and economists. And they openly call for 80-plus percent population reduction. This is in public documents. They openly call for using peak oil, peak water, peak food as a weapon for population reduction and control. In fact, they are some of the biggest proponents and pushers of peak oil. And then they have big tax-free foundations known as NGOs, or non-governmental organizations that we've tracked back into the 1950s, who have been out here pushing this artificial scarcity. And that's where you have a big cartel. A great example is what's happening with De Beers. They even have the Diamond Empire documentary on PBS, where they have in France and also in the Netherlands huge warehouses full of giant crates of diamonds. Diamonds are actually semi-precious, but by having this monopoly through De Beers with the Oppenheimers, they're able to, you know, have $3,000 or $4,000 for a low-grade carat. So it's the same thing with oil. You know, people think that we went into Iraq to, quote, get the oil. No, it's to stop the oil from flowing. They were always telling Saddam, quit pumping too much. OPEC was always getting angry at him. So by controlling that oil and one of the biggest sources of it, they can then jack up the prices. And you know, this is very fortuitous. We set this interview up, as you know, George, a few weeks ago. But now, just in the last 3 days, it's all over the LA Times, you name it, red-handed, mobile. Let me get my notes here. Mobil, Chevron, and Texaco, their internal memos through FOIA requests, we now have them. What common sense already showed, what you've talked about, that they artificially went around buying up refineries and then just shutting them down, paying many times what they were worth, shutting them down. Their own memos say we want to shut down refining because we've got an overabundance of oil, so by bottlenecking it, we can control it and literally rape the American people.
And a perfect example for all of this, Alex and Paul, is what has been going on over the past couple months. As oil in the price per barrel approached $70 a barrel, the increase at the pumps where we fill up our cars was instant. It was immediate, and it started to soar. Now the price has dropped by $10 a barrel. I don't see this fast reduction at the pumps. Where's it going?
Well, George, I get to listen to you, of course, even earlier at night here locally. They re-air your show before it airs live again, and so I listen to you almost every night, and you've been right on target, and I've heard you arguing with the guests and others, and I appreciate you showing the other view, but it's nothing but hysteria. And last hour you mentioned how for weeks and weeks, it's been substantively down from $78 a barrel down to $60 a barrel. Where is the reduction? And by the way, the Saudis thought that the oil was disappearing. Suddenly, they found these giant reservoirs are refilling. Independent petroleum geologists have been there, and it's in the Financial Times of London. It's in the London Times. Now they're saying that Saudi Arabia has double the sweet and light crude. That's premium, folks. It's almost gasoline coming out of the ground. It is suddenly just these wells are refilling themselves almost magically. And by the way, it's not a debate about abiotic oil. There is certainly fossil oils as well.
True.
But all petroleum geologists will tell you, and it's taught at major universities, that yes, there is some oil that is produced by eating the crust, and this is literally the juice, basically, the oil boiled out of these rocks. But they say that most of it is from dead dinosaurs. But now more and more scientists who aren't oil company funded are saying, no, this stuff is being generated by the mantle, by the magma, and its interface with the crust. And Paul Watson has done incredible research on this at PrismPlanet.com. Of course, it's linked at CoastToCoastAM.com. We have just hundreds and hundreds of articles and documents and internal documents. This is not our opinion, but even at CoastToCoastAM.com, you have a link today in your featured news from Live Science, highly respected publication, The Mysterious Origins of and Supply of Oil. And in this article, it says right here they've got geologists and people saying, well, yes, there is abiotic oil. So they were trying to deny abiotic oil just 5 years ago. It's been a big, dirty secret. Now, okay, there's abiotic oil that isn't produced from dead plants and plankton and dinosaurs, but never mind that, never mind the man behind the curtain, just buy our fraud. And, George, what you said 5 minutes ago, I totally agree with. Oil is horrible. It is dirty. They've been suppressing. I mean, I have GM manuals from 30 years ago where they admit 100-mile-a-gallon cars then. The Japanese have got 150-mile-a-gallon cars that have power and speed. So this is all being suppressed by the same cartel, and it's holding up the progress of humanity, all our other industries. But the Club of Rome says that if we have abundant energy, energy is the most basic form or currency in the universe. We're made up of energy. By controlling that, they control us. And so it's essential, they say, to restrict energy to destroy the middle class and to bring us into a new dark age of control. And we read that hysterical propaganda piece in Rolling Stone that they wrote back in April. That whole thing, they call it a dark age, the end of civilization, everything breaking down. This is pure bull, and it must be resisted.
Yet not everybody, Paul Joseph Watson, not everybody believes the sinister end of the oil companies. They truly believe oil is running out and peak, do they not?
Well, that's right. The peak oil crowd do subscribe to that notion. But in relation to that, to pick up from the first 2 points that you and Alex raised, Marion Hubbert, the original creator of the Hubbert peak theory, now known as peak oil, he first presented his theory, his scientific paper, to the American Petroleum Institute way back in 1956. Interesting, therefore, is that these leaked memos, which Alex mentioned, which have come out today, outline a deliberate agenda to gouge prices and create artificial scarcity by limiting the capacities of and outright closing oil refineries. And who was the group that was lobbying all the oil industry companies to carry out that agenda? It was the American Petroleum Institute, the very first organization to be receptive to the peak oil theory via Marion Hubbert. And an example of how these oil refineries are being closed, shut off, cutbacks in production is the Bakersfield, California, Kern River oil field. And here we have a prolific oil refinery which went from having an estimated 54 million barrels of oil in 1942 to producing 736 million barrels by 1986. But in spring 2004, unexplainably, Shell announces that they're going to close the factory, despite the internal documents which were obtained by Los Angeles Times, which showed that the 2004 profits had exceeded by 57 times the company's forecast. So if the agenda of the oil companies is purely the bottom line, why on earth did Shell announce that they would cut production and eventually close the plant, which ties into the memos released today, where Mobil, Chevron and Texaco have been caught doing exactly the same thing, creating artificial scarcity.
Paul, if you believe, as I do, that oil is self-renewing, that this planet has an abundance of it. As a matter of fact, years ago in St. Louis, I did an interview with an individual who believes that the oil fields underneath the ocean floors could last well over 100 or 200,000 years. He's probably right, even at our current use of oil. But if you believe in the self-renewing theory, what do you think the oil is? Where's it coming from? When this planet formed itself back 4.5 billion years ago, what do you think it was? Because there's no question in my mind, there's no way we could be using oil at the rate we're using it, and it comes from dead dinosaurs and prehistoric plants. There's no way.
There's no way that could happen. The only thing that you could think is that the world, as I believe, is designed via intelligent design. It has a creator, and that creator instilled in the very earth the means to which we could survive for thousands and thousands of years. And the basic geology of abiotic oil, self-replenishing oil, supports that.
Well, I've got to add this. George, I mean, it's admitted abiotic oil does exist. They just debate what percentage of it is
right
there.
Oh, I believe it's real. I believe that's most of our oil source.
Well, I think all the evidence shows that. I want listeners to understand that I've listened carefully. I remember 5-6 years ago, Paul said, "Do you believe in peak oil?" And I said, "Let's research it more. I know the Club of Rome is pushing it, but you know, I left it open. I actually stewed on this, and so did Paul for years. And about 4 years ago, we were sure that they were about to launch a big program claiming all the oil was gone from their documents and their battle plan back in the 70s. These guys follow a strategic long-term model. And so you know, I'm glad we've got a couple hours here, George, because we've got them dead to rights. I mean, we've got not our opinions or just the research. We have their own admissions. I mean, we have the confessions here, and we're all being ripped off. I mean, here's an example. I've interviewed the oil company executives. I've interviewed, you know, down from the chaplain up to one of the CEOs, people that were there at Gull Island and Prudhoe Bay back in the 70s when they hit oil reserves that dwarf Saudi Arabia. I mean, it makes all the reserves in Saudi look like a joke. And guess what? We built that pipeline, and America gets 20% of it. They keep most of the fields totally undeveloped, 80% publicly owned by Shell and BP, given to them by our government, mm-hmm. just given, goes to Japan and China, where they pay $7, $8 now a gallon on average for it, and we don't get it, and they're not letting even a fraction of that oil out. Listen, I've got oil company reports. I mean, half my family's doctors, the other half are petroleum geologists. I mean, I got family in Houston, Louisiana, right here in Austin. They're listening right now. And, of course, some of them can't come on the air. One of them just retired, ran one of the biggest, if I say the biggest, I'd give it away, one of the biggest plants in Houston. He just retired.
What do they tell you about this theory of abiotic?
It's all true. There's oil coming out of our ears. It's everywhere. They will come in to some of the biggest plants. They'll shut a third of them down. They'll shut a half of them down. They will. It's not the environmentalist. It's not boutique oils. That is all just total propaganda. In fact, the oil company memos now show what I've been being told by my family. We are literally, listen, back in the 70s, they found a 600-square-mile oil field bigger than Saudi Arabia's sweet and light crude, the same type of oil you get out of Venezuela, incredibly sweet, right off the coast, 200 miles off the coast of Louisiana.
Well,
and
what
the Fed said, you're not going to touch a bit of that.
What is fascinating to me, and we'll continue to talk about this, is the fact that these fields replenish themselves. They're self-renewing. It's almost as if, you know, when you pull out sand on a beach, it fills right back in again. It just never ends. We'll talk about that. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating book by Thomas Gold, The Deep Hot Biosphere. It talks about the ability for oil to be abiotic, that just continues to replenish itself, self-renewing. It's incredible theory. We'll talk a little bit about that with Paul Joseph Watson and Alex Jones as well when we come right back. Alex, it would seem to me that we've got really two fronts here. One is, of course, the oil company's apparent false shortages and what they're trying to create with this theory of peak oil. And then, of course, the abiotic theory of oil replenishing itself. It's like we have two major issues to deal with here, don't we?
Yes, sir. And they had evidence back in the 1880s, and a lot of scientists were saying it was self-generating between the interaction of this giant 18,000, you know, mile around planetoid with the giant core and then the mantle of molten rock around the core and the very tiny thin crust that's only about 2% of the entire mass of this planet or this planetoid. And so you have these incredible heats that can form rubies and diamonds and emeralds and all these thousands of types of stone and agates and just all of these gemstones. Well, it's also forming oil. So I want to make clear to the audience, abiotic oil is admitted. The oil companies, though, who literally own the entire industry and pay for most of the endowments at universities, have focused and propagandized for over 100 years that it comes from dead dinosaurs. Well, folks, that's ridiculous. We've used hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of billions of barrels of oil, and now they've been putting this propaganda out that oil has peaked. And regardless of where it's being generated or how it's being generated, we know that if you really study the industry publications, not the mainstream newspapers and propaganda, that we are drowning in oil. The reason they've taken over Tajikistan and Uzbekistan and Afghanistan and five other stands, oil company memos have reported, it is not because we want that oil, but we don't want China getting it and then breaking the oil cartels.
Mm-hmm.
The British went into Saudi Arabia in 1918, and they literally drew the lines of the Middle East, and they set up the Saudis. They're just puppets. The Arabs get about 20% of the money. They follow orders, and they're drowning in a sea of oil. And so this is actually about controlling the overabundance. They're desperately trying to ensure that that supply doesn't flow to the people, or they're going to lose control. And also, it's about keeping us on oil economy. I mean, how many times have they been caught buying off patents, threatening people, going in and destroying workshops? I mean, this is mainstream news. You have delved into it in great depth, more than the mainstream news. They are we're 30 years ahead. The things we see today, we're really 30 years ahead conservatively, and that's with technology doubling every 2.5 years. So, folks, this is neo-feudalism. People need to go look up in their encyclopedia or their dictionary, feudalism, serfdom. Feudalism was a science of a tiny group of nobles who are normally about a foot taller than their slaves because they would institutionally, their actual feudal manuals from Rome and then ancient England and other places, even the Japanese have them. It's a similar system of how to starve your population, how to keep them on 1% of the land, how to not let them use energy, how to keep control. These are handbooks that have been passed down, and now it's being done on a mass scale globally. And if I sound angry, folks, I am, because Paul and I and many others calmly research this day after day, and when we get a chance to talk to, you know, 15, 20 million people, we get excited because I'm tired of watching myself and others be raped. And, George, I'm just glad you're letting us on to talk about this.
Well, I want to know, for example, Alex and Paul, you know, we just had a couple horrendous hurricanes hit the Gulf here that has hundreds and hundreds of oil refineries. Alex, have you seen one major shortage any place in this country yet?
No,
I mean, they scared the daylights out of us. They said that, you know, the capacity is gone, we're in trouble. The prices went up, but I haven't seen anybody complain that they can't get gasoline.
Well, George, literally, I've talked to four members of my family in the last month that are at rigs, that are out there in survey ships looking for new fields, that are in Houston. And just like we were told, there was total bedlam and machine gun death and roving gangs raping and killing. Even the New York Times admits total hype, total fraud. 98% of it didn't happen. Lies out of FEMA. Now it's the same thing with oil. I have talked personally to family, and it's been in the Houston Chronicle and other papers that damage not as bad to rigs as we were told. Those rigs are fine.
Are they still pumping, or did they shut them down?
Oh, they did shut them down when the two hurricanes came in, but that was only a day or two for each event. Some of the rigs, four or five of them, got blown off their moorings. All they do is then tow them back with tugboats, drop their feet again, and then recouple. That's a couple days. So there was minor problems. There were some problems with the refineries themselves, but again, this is, look, we have the oil companies' own memos. In fact, Paul, Paul has really researched these and written several articles about it. Paul, tell George about the details of these oil company memos.
Yeah, all right. Let's hear this, Paul.
Well, that's right. It's a story that broke today. There was new information released by the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights, whereby Mobil, Chevron, and Texaco internal confidential memos outline a deliberate agenda to create artificial scarcity.
Now, when was the scarcity supposed to occur? Now, or was this an old memo for years gone back? What was the time period?
This was 96. We're talking mid-90s,
all right,
where this idea is introduced.
And this is a strategic plan. You can read all these at PrisonPlanet.com. There's a link at CoastToCoastAM.com. Folks, they say it's a strategic long-term plan to more than quadruple profits, which we've now seen them make more money in the last 2 years they made in the previous 10. And again, we're not against making money, but if it's not free market, if it's cartel, crony, oligopoly, monopoly, and by the way, this is oil companies, they communicate with each other through this foundation, and so they're all colluding together to create a monopoly, and so this is a strategic strategy to do this across the board and literally rape us, and I'm just surprised the LA Times reported on it.
All right, let's get back into the memos, Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, it strikes at the very heart of what we're trying to communicate, because even before the memos were released, we had the example of Bakersfield, California. The record amount of profits that that oil refinery was producing, and yet to the absolute disbelief of corporation watchers and organizations like that, Shell decided to forego the astronomical profit and attempted to close the plant. It was eventually sold to a smaller diesel company after an FTC probe, which is basically a paper tiger, but Shell did end up having to find another buyer. And also in Martinez, California, again, a Royal Dutch Shell-owned facility, wildly profitable, but Shell cut the production by 10%, according to them, due to maintenance, which they carried out at the peak energy demand time. So again, inexplicable reasons for shutting down these plants at times when especially California is really craving energy supplies. So
why isn't anybody cracking down on them?
Well, because there's no bigger lobby than energy, and the energy companies own the defense contractors, own the big drug companies. The drugs are predominantly made out of petrochemicals. Petrochemicals make the computer, make the glass you've got in your hand, make the plastic fish tank. They make the shoes you wear, the shirts you wear. I mean, literally, there's nothing bigger in these memos. And I spent hours today reading these, George. I mean, it's made me really mad.
And 40 years ago, Alex, I remember I'm in grade school, and I remember reading about energy, and they were talking about how we will lose oil in the next 40 or 50 years. So I'm saying to myself, God, George, when you're 50, there won't be any more oil. And here we are. It's still flowing.
Well, that's right. And again, we go back to the 50s. These guys are in power because of their strategic long-term planning and propaganda. It's that feudalist model. And I'm here looking and reading where they're saying we've got to create artificial scarcity. The very thing, look, 3.5 years ago, Greg Palast, top BBC Newsnight investigative journalist, got 2,000 plus pages from the World Bank. Joseph Stiglitz, the chief economist, quit, went public, and in those documents, it talks about creating artificial oil shortages. It talks about, they talk about Argentina, where they just shut the water off, and they say if we shut it off for a week, that'll cause riots, and then our client government can declare martial law, and then we can really take the country over, and people, then if we triple the water price, then they'll accept a doubling if we lower it, just what you said last
just
hour.
Just what I said, that's right.
Before we got on, bring it up to $3, $3.50 a gallon, and then you'll accept $2.50. And we actually have, I have them, they're on my website, the secret IMF World Bank documents. I mean, again, this isn't conspiracy theory, people. They are, understand, I mean, put yourselves in their position. They're these old, rich, powerful families. And, I mean, David Rockefeller has said over and over again, and so has his father, that competition is bad. You know, these guys are not free market. Look, Henry Kissinger, declassified document 1991, written 1973 for the CIA for the Club of Rome, and Kissinger says, we're going to cut off the food, we're going to cut off the water, we're going to sterilize them. And we have all this posted. This is National Security Archive. Paul, tell him about these Rome documents.
Who's them, though? Who's he talking about? Us?
Well the whole world. Listen, it's not just America. We all get raped at the pump. Can you imagine what this does to farm production and fertilizers in Africa, Asia, and Latin America?
Wipes them out.
Exactly, folks. We have the best economy in the world. We're 4% of the population. We got half the wealth. We've got an average, income of $30,000 a year in this country. You imagine being in Africa where, the average income's about $500 a year? Paul, tell him what the Club of Rome documents say.
Well, yeah, this is key because there was an August 2004 Popular Science article which quoted Club of Rome officials as saying that peak oil would hit in 2003, which it didn't. So it's necessary to know what the Club of Rome is and what they stand for. And basically it reads as a who's who of the elite. David Rockefeller, Avril Harriman, John J. McCloy, all intimate insiders and policy directors of the global elite. So again, we have this top-down elitist embrace of peak oil theories. And it's interesting in relation to that Colonel Fletcher Prouty, this ultimate insider that eventually blew the whistle on a lot of clandestine programs, was a strong proponent of the abiotic oil theory. And he said that the idea of oil as a fossil fuel, non-renewable, was, quote, right out of the Rockefeller Bible.
If peak oil is real, and let's just take this assumption for just a moment, how do they know this? How do they know we've reached a peak when it continues to flow and we don't have shortages? I mean, they just continue to pump out whatever they need. Saudi Arabia just said, we're going to pump more to meet the demand. I mean, it's like no big deal.
Saudi Arabia confirmed that they've got double previous reserves, another $200 billion, to be the world leader in oil production for the next 75 to 100 years.
Okay, so my question, though, is how do we know, even as far back in 1956, when Hubbard came up with this idea of peak oil, how do they know that we've reached this peak?
Well, that's right. Understand, 70, and I've got my notes here, I've actually got the geological surveys, 74 to 75% of the Earth is saltwater covered. And we looked this up. Back in 56, only about 3% of the ocean floor had been surveyed by sonar. And you were in the Navy, you know this, George. Now they have still not surveyed it the entire ocean floor and done the studies looking for oil. They've only developed about 10% of the ocean floor. Everywhere they look, they're finding giant reserves of oil. Everywhere they look in the shallow seas near major population centers, that's where they look so they can pipe it to those centers and readily. Look, it's ridiculous. Russia, the Wall Street Journal reported this year, has doubled its known oil finds close to the surface in the last 5 years. Doubled, ladies and gentlemen. Russia is swimming in it. As we mentioned earlier, all these stands in Central Asia just literally drowning in oil. Huge finds everywhere. Listen, folks, I have family. Okay, we've got an old ranch we got with Spanish land grants in East Texas. And without going into too much detail, the point is this. There's oil and natural gas that comes blasting out of the ground. I mean, oil actually, like the Beverly Hillbillies, actually comes out of the ground, folks. Try to dig a well, oil starts spilling into it. And this stuff blasts out of the ground. The wells and gas wells are capped out there. They drill them, they find them, incredible pressure, and they just cap them. I mean, we don't even get the money from oil wells and gas wells that literally spew under massive pressure.
I'm going to read a little something from Matt Seven, our past Coast guest. He is the author of Life After the Oil Crash. He believes in peak oil. This is what he says. He thinks the Earth was originally endowed with 2 trillion barrels of oil. Says we've already consumed half of it, 1 trillion gone. And he said when 50% of these world oil supplies have been depleted, not only will oil production decline, but it becomes increasingly more expensive to bring up the remaining oil. My point is even if we might have used and consumed this much oil, it seems to keep replenishing itself. And I think with the people who are doing peak oil research, who may not be involved with the oil companies, I don't think they understand that it seems that it just keeps flowing back.
Well, George, we've got a weird collusion here, and Paul can talk about this because he's done a lot of research on it. There's a weird collusion. There's a lot of people that hate cars, that hate the congestion, that hate the pollution, that hate sprawl. In a lot of cases, frankly, I don't blame them.
I don't blame them. Right.
But they are grasping this nice narrative, this pretty little fairy tale they've been told about Rumpelstiltskin and peak oil, or Alice in Wonderland, and it's just that. And so they grasp a hold of it, and they think that's going to stimulate the development of alternative systems. Listen, folks, I want the alternative systems they've had for 50, you know, to 40 years. I want a car that doesn't use fuel and will go 200 miles an hour and is an air car. But I'm sorry, the oil companies, admittedly from their own documents, listen to me, these are posted right now on PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com. Their own documents say they want to control you by limiting energy. You know, it's simple. This is the most basic ingredient in life is energy. And he who controls the energy controls the world. He who controls the spice, you know, controls the universe, to use the Frank Herbert line. And of course, that was the analogy for oil in his best-selling books. So, please, people, this is not our opinion. It never is. And George is right on the money on this. We are drowning in it, and perhaps in the next hour we can talk about their global plan, how this ties in to the transponders that are going in the cars in Texas by law to track us in taxes that George talked about last year with the Saudi technology. This is a part of a plan. If you've got energy as an organism, you're going to have freedom. But if they can restrict that energy, whether it be oxygen or oil, you know, oil is the oxygen for the industry, for the machines. It is the base energy component, like plankton are the base form in the food chain. If they can dominate that word one first initial key point in the entire paradigm, they have total spectrum dominance. We must smash that total spectrum dominance if humanity is to literally take over space, move into the planets, move into the stars, and reach our full potential. And I'm not going to let a bunch of inbred New World Order trash destroy humanity's true mission. And these people are destroying our future. They are destroying our development. They are destroying our evolution. They are holding us back. And they have a lack of vision, and they are a bunch of crooks.
My God, Alex, it sounds like you're running for political office.
Listen, I'm into creativity and the dynamic human spirit, George. I love humanity, and I don't like the fact that my children are going to grow up in a slave state where the resources aren't there and where we're in poverty, and I mean all of us. The plan is to bring America into poverty so a bunch of fat cats can lord over us. That's feudalism.
Let's talk about that global plan when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Maybe besides making lots of money, the big oil companies aren't in a rush to come up with alternative fuel for us because they know they have an abundance of the kind of fuel we're using right now, an abundance that could last hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Do you think one of the reasons why, Paul, that they haven't replenished oil and changed it and got us into a different alternative form of energy is they know that they've got an unlimited supply of oil?
Well, I think that's exactly the case, and the abiotic research pioneered by the Russians proves that. Alex mentioned before that the Russians have doubled their oil supply, and it's basically the backbone of their economy now. And that's because in 51, the Russians began to pioneer the research of abiotic deep oil drilling, an example of which was the Dnieper-Donets Basin, which was declared barren before these new technologies of deep drilling were brought into existence. And the results of the expansion of these techniques have brought Russia from being petroleum poor in the 50s to now being one of the largest petroleum exporters in the world. And it's a technology that Russia, somewhat to the chagrin of the US, has exported to other countries. For example, after the end of the Vietnam War, Vietnam was declared all but barren of oil by the Americans because the Americans were using the conventional drilling techniques to try and decipher the potential oil wells. But the Russians stepped in and offered the Vietnamese government free personnel and technology using these abiotic drilling techniques, asking for only a share of the potential oil sales. So obviously the Vietnamese accepted, and the Russians flew their oil experts in from Moscow, which eventually led to the White Tiger oil field and others in Vietnam, which are raging successes. So the Russian example and the fact that they pioneered the abiotic technology, which is still being ignored and suppressed in the West, is proof that these deep well oil reserves do exist and are being suppressed in the Western world for the benefit of the major oil conglomerations who have the interest in creating artificial scarcity to prop up the whole peak oil myth.
How did, if the dinosaurs and the decayed plants created the oil millions and millions of years ago, how did it get down 4,000 to 5,000, 6,000 feet underground? How did that happen?
Well, exactly. It's not possible. And you mentioned Thomas Gold, the Cornell professor and astronomer, who proposed that same abiotic theory, that oil was a renewable primordial syrup that was continually manufactured in the mantle of the Earth, transported up through the Earth via methane gas particles. And it's simply impossible that those kind of substances would be deep that below the Earth. And it's clear that vegetation or dinosaurs is not the cause of that, which defines the conventional view. But it's simply not possible that this fossilized origin would be embedded that deep within the Earth.
Alex, you talk about the global plan and how we can fight it. Dr. Gene Malov may have died because he was trying to develop an alternative energy source. How do we fight this?
Well, you know, earlier, I'm glad you first mentioned this point about how does it get so deep. The geologists will tell you that you don't find dinosaur bones any deeper than 500 feet, and that supposedly oil can't get more than 3,000, 4,000 feet down from the supposed fossil fuels if it comes from dead creatures. And then on top of this, you know, now the Russians are drilling at 10, 15, 20 times that depth, so are many other countries, and finding huge oil reserves. It just shows right there on its face that it's not the oil from decomposing microorganisms and dinosaurs. But answering your question about how to deal with this global neo-feudalist plan to put us all on this New World Order plantation, George, you know, I got upset in the last segment because we should all be upset. The entire progress of a species, the dominant species on this planet, that has so much potential, so much incredible inventions and art and ideas, to have it stifled so some monopoly men can maintain their total control because they're too afraid to let any of these new technologies come out, that makes me angry. And as a solution, we need the American people and the people of the world to start realizing how much personal potential power they have in the choices they make every day, to support alternative media, alternative energy, alternative everything. We have the power. I mean, look, 5 years ago, you couldn't find organic food in grocery stores in this country. I've been all over the country in the last year, and you can find organic food in most grocery stores here in Austin.
There are even grocery stores made devoted to selling just that.
Exactly. So we made the market. We demanded the organic food. We asked for it. It was little old ladies and you know, families saying, hey, I want organic apples. And, hey, I want, you know, organic beef. And, hey, I want organic peas. So it's the same thing with alternative energy. It's, George, I was in love with what you were doing last hour or the hour before that, whenever you were talking about and doing national tests of does it work to add this to your fuel, you know, giving a forum just to alternative ideas is explosive. So it's a process. But I would also challenge people to spend a little less time watching the football game. and a little more time with their families, a little more time researching alternative news. It's not saying all the alternative is true, but it's the exploration of the alternative where we find renaissance. That's all the renaissance was the acceptance of alternative views and ideas, and we went from a dark age that had lasted 600 years or longer into the age of enlightenment. Well, the globalists artificially say that they want to create a new dark age to control us. That's because they're panicking, George. We want to create a new renaissance or a new enlightenment against these globalists. You know, they claim to be the Illuminati. They are the illumined ones, mm-hmm. but that's kind of a trick question. They want to be the only people that are illuminated. They want to be the only ones that know. That's why their symbol is the owl, because it can see in the dark and is a bird of prey feeding on us, the little blind creatures. Well, I'm not blind, and I'm not going to be their slave, and I've got the torch of information, and I'm going to burn down their fraud.
Now, let's talk about the specifics of this fraud, then, this peak oil conspiracy that's out there. Are you saying, then, that these companies have gotten together clandestinely? They talk about this, and they said, let's create, first and foremost, artificial shortages. Let's just keep feeding information to the public that eventually there's not going to be any more oil. Now, we know we've got an abundance of oil, so we'll keep making it, but we'll get it up from $30 a barrel to 70, maybe 80, maybe 90. Is that what they want?
Well, this is frightening. We have reporters in Europe and the U.S. that for 25 years have been sneaking into Bilderberg Group meetings. And this year they were able to get into the Bilderberg Group meeting. They were able to get waiters and servants in the five-star hotel in Europe to tell them what was happening, to steal the memos and the documents and the talking points. From four different sources, I have it that Kissinger said oil would double. This is almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Would double by the middle of next year. These same sources were able to learn that the Soviet Union would fall 1 year before it did, that the Berlin Wall would fall a year before it did.
They're all psychics.
They're there getting the intel as the Bilderberg Group stages everything. These same sources were able to get intel that they said they would invade Iraq in 02. They really invaded Iraq in 03. And I had these reporters on a year before saying, no, it'll be March of 03. That exact thing happened. So the point is, we know these are good sources. We know these globalists are running things because whatever they say ends up happening. Let's pray Kissinger is wrong this time. And it hasn't, gone to $150 a barrel by the middle of 06, as he
for that to happen, there's got to be some kind of catastrophe, whether it's natural or man-made.
And it's Kissinger that said that if we had a big enough disaster in the U.S., we would accept foreign troops and ask for them. He said that in Evian, France, in 91 at a Bilderberg Group meeting. And we now have foreign Dutch and Mexican troops in New Orleans, my friend. And they have now set that precedent, and we have open discussion of martial law. I interviewed Congressman Ron Paul yesterday, and he openly said that there are preparations for total martial law and gun confiscation, and that the avian flu, he's a Republican, the avian flu and all of it is a smokescreen for the military takeover of the United States. And that's the most conservative member of Congress and a Vietnam veteran.
He admitted that.
We have the transcript on PrisonPlanet.com right now, and folks, you can go to CoastToCoastAM.com and link through to it. I mean, this, look.
Because as you know, Alex, we've been saying that on this program for a year now, that this flu, the avian flu, is not a pandemic. It's not what you think.
Well, Ron Paul is also, I'm fully aware of that, George. It's why you're always right on target. It amazes me because few are. Listen, he's a medical doctor, and I didn't do any pre-interview. I had him on. I said, "What do you think of this this thing with the avian flu?" And he said, "It's total hype." And then I said, "Well, what about martial law?" And even CNN said Bush wants martial law. And it's not just Bush. I mean, again, he's just a puppet, just like Clinton was. I don't want to. You're right to not get political because they own these guys. They're a dime a dozen. He's just a CEO, a front man. But But Ron Paul, I mean, the most conservative voting record in the last 100 years, he's rated with that record. He came right out, and he, in fact, if you want to grab the clip, it's on the site. You're welcome to play it, George. He came right out, and he said this. In fact, I've got the transcript right here. He said, this is the preparation for martial law. And I said, now, you're really saying that? And he said, yes. There's no other way to look at it. They're looking at a way to take this country over and confiscate our guns, and we'll never emerge from the police state. But here's the good news, George. The scientific law of the universe, for every action, there is an equal or greater reaction. And so as this dark power, this global power rises, there is the equal or greater reaction of people, of every political persuasion, of every race. Worldwide, people innately, you talk about that organic internet, people are so receptive to this message now. George, I probably get, no exaggeration, 500 emails for every negative email I get. 6-7 years ago, I got 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Paul?
Well, that's right. And if I could just pick up on what I believe is a key focal point, Alex mentioned the role of the Bilderberg Group, and for anyone who doubts that they have any influence over world events, the BBC unearthed documents before the 2003 conference dating back to the early 50s, where Bilderberg had discussed the creation of the European Union and also the European currency, with the European currency some 40 years before it came into effect. So these people have power. They do influence world events. So it shouldn't surprise us that the consensus on oil at the spring 2005 Bilderberg meeting in Munich, Germany, at which oil industry moguls were represented, BP, Royal Dutch Shell,
mm-hmm.
for two, the consensus was not that only that the cost of oil would continue to rise, but that imposing a direct UN tax on oil at the wellhead was the only way to introduce a global government world tax, the implications of which for American sovereignty should worry all of us.
Right.
So from our inside sources that penetrated Bilderberg, the Bilderbergers are all big fans of the peak oil theory. And when you have editors from Time magazine, New York Times, Washington Post, hearing Dutch Royal Shell and BP execs spread these ideas that peak oil is a reality, then they're going to report it with even more vigor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit, if you can, Paul, as I started this program, talking about the mystery of Eugene Island 330 off there in the Gulf. Tell us about this.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that after its discovery in 1973, it was producing 15,000 barrels of oil a day, which then slowed to around 4,000 barrels in 1989. And then for no logical reason whatsoever, the production spiked back up to 13,000 barrels a day in the mid-90s. And what the researchers found when they analyzed the oil field with time-lapse 3D seismic imaging, and in fact 4D to analyze the movements of the oil itself, is that there was an unexplained deep fault in the bottom corner of the computer scan, which showed oil gushing in from a previously unknown deep source. It was basically like a garden hose effect, migrating up through the rock to replenish the existing supply. And the analysis of the oil which came in the mid-90s compared to 10 years previously showed that it was of a geologically different age from the original oil extracted from the well. So both the scientists and geologists from the big oil companies have seen the evidence and admitted that the Eugene Island oil field amazingly is refilling itself.
And that's not the only spot on this planet either that is renewing itself.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's just all over the globe.
Constantly.
It's unlimited. I mean, the evidence is pointing towards unlimited. It's just the Earth is creating it like a giant generator. I mean, if it can create diamonds and rubies and agates and crystals, what else can it create?
Do you think, whether it's 1,000 years or 10,000 years, Alex or Paul, do you think we'll ever run out of this stuff?
I don't know. The scientists don't know, but I know this. The very people covering this up are the ones suppressing all the new clean technologies so my children don't have to breathe toxic chemicals. I want off oil. Paul?
Well, I want off oil for obvious reasons as well. There's no question. Even if it is renewing, there are some areas on this planet that have been gifted. They've got more of it than others.
No, you're right. But, I mean, my point is what you said earlier. We need to get off oil, but the very same crowd scamming us with peak oil are the same people that won't let us have these clean-burning systems.
And the estimations are, in answer to the question, that if we reduced oil refinery by 30%, that would enable the abiotic oil reserves to kind of catch up with the demand. And that would enable us to have limitless oil supply. But
they come rushing right back in again.
Yeah, but it's doubtful that Shell, BP, Royal Dutch are going to let it happen because it's not in their interest.
Well, there's no doubt then that they may create this peak oil, not only in verbiage, but they may create it physically by trying to use too much. Is that what you're saying?
It's definitely a possibility.
Well, that's with existing fields. That's if they don't develop all the other fields they're not touching.
Right, right. I mean, there's some fields in Russia, for example, that could be the biggest oil reserves on the planet, at least that we know of right now.
We know proved oil reserves up in Alaska dwarf Saudi Arabia.
In our own country.
In our own country, but again, Japan and China get 80% of it.
Because our production in the United States has dropped by half. Is that on purpose?
Listen, my family, again, has capped oil and gas reserves. You know, grandparents, people do. And these are powerful wells. They're not, I mean, these are not spent wells. They drill them. These are big companies. They cap them, and they don't pump the oil out. And they've got a cartel going because nobody else will come buy the lease. And so, frankly, it also costs a lot of people that have oil in their land money because all you get is the lease. You don't get the actual production.
Well, that's true. You don't get the money until it starts to pump.
Yeah, they just pay you an amount, and then it's like a mafia. No one else will pay you. They just pay you enough money to hold it off. And look, we have their own memos where they go around buying up the oil refineries. I have family who works at oil refineries, I mean, high level, running the plant. Now retired, and they're at peak levels. They just retired this year, and they just shut a third of the plant and go, oh, we're just not going to refine oil anymore. And they're like, what do you mean? We're making giant profits. People need these chemicals. We've got markets, and they're just, nope, we're shutting down.
We'll be back in a moment. We won't shut down. And welcome back, Paul Joseph Watson, Alex Jones. Next hour, your phone calls as well. Alex, I'm going to give you a moment for a statement, and then you, Paul, with regards to peak oil, because I want you both to give us kind of a summation of what you believe is actually happening. You first, Alex.
Well, first off, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to do this. There is nowhere in what I'd call mainstream media, I mean something that has tens of millions of listeners, bigger than any cable news show by far, where this truth is allowed to come out. We have not just made these claims. We have backed them up at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And if this truth does come out, which we're now starting to see even in the LA Times and places about this scam, then we can get our energy prices down and get the freedom that's associated with having that extra income to put our kids through college, to go on vacations, to have a better home and a better neighborhood, to be able to send our children to better schools. And that's why I'm so angry and upset about this and so thankful to George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM, one of the few places in big media where you actually have free speech and you know, real discussions. And then in closing, on the subject of a final statement on peak oil, or a basic statement on peak oil, I should say, it follows the paradigm of the New World Order controllers. They're all about problem, reaction, solution. They create problems, then they scare us, and they give us false solutions. And, you know, my new film is called Martial Law. What do we hear every day on the news? How good martial law is. Well, learn what's behind martial law, who controls it, and how to stop it. Or Paul Watson's book, Order Out of Chaos, Elite-Sponsored Terror and the New World Order. Totally just an amazing book full of documents. It gets into martial law. It gets into phony crises, crises creation that they're then set up to profit and consolidate control from. So I do hope folks will visit Infowars.com in the shopping cart. I hope they'll get Paul's book or my new video. Also, for people that are online, I have a new e-movie that's going to be out for a month only on the Internet first, George, and that's the Order of Death. An individual snuck into Bohemian Grove. He actually worked there for 2 years, shot all this hidden video, second infiltration ever. We've got it on tape in the new film, The Order of Death, plus its connection to Skull and Bones, and that's available for 15 cents. That's right, just the cost of the bandwidth. At prisonplanet.tv, 15 cents a day, prisonplanet.tv, or folks can call toll-free to get the books or videos, 1-888-253-3139. And again, folks, you're authorized to make copies of my videos because my only goal is to get them out to people. That's our goal, is to spread the truth and survive this attempt by the globalists to enslave us. So I appreciate you letting us promote that, George, and it's very important work. Please get it, folks.
Paul Joseph Watson, your thoughts on peak oil?
Well, my summary on peak oil would be peak oil is a top-down theory. It does not have a grassroots origin, as we referenced with the Bilderberg documents, the Club of Rome. And the people telling us to make cutbacks are never going to sacrifice their private jets, their luxury cars, their lifestyle. And yet middle-class Westerners seem to always be the ones to bear the brunt during recessions and financial meltdowns. So we're sold this scam, which is all tied together by the uniform policies of artificial scarcity, when the entire global financial system is based around popping artificial booms of wealth by creating artificial busts of scarcity. And the same goes for any major world economy. So peak oil is a theory advanced by the elite, by the oil industry, by the very people that you would think peak oil would harm, unless it was a cover for another agenda, which from the evidence of artificial scarcity being deliberately created, the reasons for doing so and who benefits, it's clear to me that peak oil is a myth. It should be exposed for what it is, which is another excuse for the globalists to seize more control over our lives and sacrifice more American sovereignty in the meantime.
George, that's always a key point to look for with hoaxes. It's all emotional. It's claims. These people never have any facts, or their numbers are frauds.
And they're making money to boot.
Exactly. Anytime. Exactly, George. Again, you have the very industry that's been well known for trust busting and, you know, being involved in oligopolies and monopolies, now funding this propaganda, a bunch of well-meaning dupes on board. I'm just glad that you've done the research and know that it's a fraud, but I just hope we can turn the corner. But it does seem like people that I talk to instinctively know that this whole thing is a fraud, but I just hope the folks over at Rolling Stone wake up to, I mean, literally, they wrote that article, and I'm not knocking them. I don't think they mean, you know, bad out of it. I think they've been conned. But you read that, it's like a Blade Runner slash Road Warrior Mad Max scenario where we're all living in mud huts. And that's a fraud. But when you read what the globalists have to say about peak oil, they are extremely clear. It is about controlling populations and siphoning off discretionary income. The globalists print the money. They own the central banks. They don't, quote, need more cash. Their power comes by controlling the entire economy, the entire spectrum, and they're threatened by you out there having a good life. They're threatened by all of us being independent. And that's why they're trying to push this scam, because if they don't control the energy, they don't control you. And so this is one of the crown jewels in the entire false political paradigm. And if it falls, many other basic houses of cards will start imploding as well.
I want to read an email to both of you that I got from a fellow by the name of Richard. He's a longtime listener to Coast. I shall not give, for obvious reasons, his last name. Hi, George. 3 months ago, a colleague and I were discussing oil prices and the myth of peak oil. He is employed by one of the big oil companies here in the United States. He is their number one legal and geographical researcher. In short, his reports go directly to the senior VP and president of the company to decide on where to pump. He says all of the oil companies in the United States and around the world have only pumped 8% of their findings. This is inside information from a friend and an oil company employee. Best regards, and then his name. Isn't that incredible? 8%?
If he's, I'm going to say this. Nothing's ever secret. There could be a secret CIA document about population reduction written in 73, and it doesn't get declassified till 91. But we see the manifestation of the program on the streets every day. So it's in industry publications that they're only developing a fraction of the explored and documented oil fields. Now, the number fluctuates between 5 and 10%, but I have the actual documents, and it's just funny that that's obviously a genuine email because it fits in with what we're getting. But even if you take the number of 10%, I live in Texas, okay? There are capped wells all over this state that literally spew black gold into the sky. These things are under pressure. They blast oil. They blast natural gas. Illinois has so much natural gas that they're always having explosions at people's homesteads when they drill a well or put in a, you know, a new electrical line.
Yeah, natural gas prices are going to go up for poor people this winter 38%.
Well, listen, I'm not that poor, but having a massive increase is going to cost me. I mean, I run my house off natural gas. Think of those widows in New York and in Chicago.
People on fixed income. They can't do this.
Listen, it's not a rumor that old people, millions of them, end up eating dog food and stuff, folks. This is a raping when we literally are drowning in natural gas. And you know what? They don't build
new pipes. What would happen, Alex, if we all simply gave up? You know how a submissive puppy dog just kind of rolls on his back and kind of gives up? What would happen if we just gave up? Do you think they'd lower the prices for us and make life a little easier for us if we conformed? What do you think?
I know that you did a lot of research on me because you said this on air before you had me on. You said for about a year, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, and folks, I'm not just tooting George's horn. He really does do his research. The guy's impressive compared to a lot of these hosts out there. George, I know what they'll do. And so when I say Prince Philip, the father of Prince Charles and the husband of Queen Elizabeth, says this, it's because it's in his book, If I Was an Animal, and in a TV interview he gave German television in 1988. And he's the head of the World Wildlife Fund, and he helps write a lot of the policy there at the Centers for Disease Control because they just parrot what the World Health Organization puts out, the UN. He says he wants to kill 80% of us. Ted Turner's a little more draconian. He says 95% is ideal. In a 1997 National Press Club dinner aired on C-SPAN, I have it on video, by the way. And of course, he has four or five kids and dozens of jet airplanes. So we have these people in published books, and we have the UN giving awards to China for forced sterilization and abortion, saying we'll use food as a weapon, 1997 as well, in a world population summit they had there. The director said that. So their stated plan, if we totally submit, if we give in, the police state is to be ratcheted up, then they will, the globalists, will release real plagues and reduce the population down to about 500 million. And I'm not joking with people. These folks are Malthusian. They are social Darwinist. They believe that it's their divine right to cull the herd, as Prince Philip said in his book, If I Was an Animal, and to cull the herd to 500 million. And he says his one wish is to be reincarnated as a virus, a particularly deadly virus, is the quote, to kill 80% of us. And, Paul, you've done exhaustive reports. You did one 2 weeks ago about the official UN plans to kill us. Would you like to tell George?
I'd love to hear that one. Tell me, Paul.
It was a UNESCO plan, and Jacques Cousteau, the former film producer, actually gave the quote, quote, "This is a terrible thing to say. In order to stabilize world population, we must eliminate 350,000 people per day. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's just as bad not to say it." And the amazing thing that I found is that peak oil proponents are often tied in with proponents of population reduction.
Well, not often. They always parrot the exact line.
You know, sometimes when I hear these tragedies like that occurred in Pakistan and Kashmir, 25,000 people die, maybe 40,000 people die. Part of me actually believes that these globalists say, well, there's 40,000 less mouths we have to worry about feeding.
Well, they call us useless feeders and useless eaters, and I know this. There are Nobel virologists saying they're poisoning people with the vaccines. And George, that's the problem. If I tried to chronicle, and I know you're aware of this, how many admissions there are that the vaccines that don't even have connections to tissue in their production for some reason have cancer viruses added or have hormones added to sterilize women. This, and then we go get UN documents where they say as early as 1956 we're going to sterilize people with vaccines, and then, you know, top labs in India discover they're poisoning the vaccines with a hormone bound to tetanus that then sterilizes the woman. I mean, this is not, when we sit here and we say the oil companies are caught red-handed saying that they're cutting back on refineries, everybody knew that already, but here's their own memos. When we say they're killing us with vaccines, they've been caught red-handed. I mean, cancer's up over 500% in the last 20 years. There's people all down my street with cancer. Little babies died all over of leukemia. This was unheard of, and I'm sick of it.
Hey, with this memo from Mobil, Chevron, and Texaco showing about the possibility of increasing prices and creating false shortages, don't you think some brilliant attorney somewhere is going to jump on this and do some kind of class action suit like they did with the tobacco industry?
Yes, and even if they pay them $500 million, that's a fraction of the tens of billions they're making.
Absolutely.
A month.
Absolutely. But somebody's going to jump on that and say, you guys conspired to raise the price of fuel. They'll all get together. They'll settle with the attorney generals of all the states and it'll be an admission of guilt. I wonder if they'll ever do that.
Well, it's the same thing with vaccines that I just mentioned that I heard you talk about in the first hour of the show. They set up, 20 years ago, the Vaccine Damage Fund. It's like $4 billion right now, and they quietly every day pay off people who can conclusively prove that my two-year-old was fine, I gave him a shot, and he convulsed and is now brain dead. And they just, and our tax money, not even the vaccine makers, they're immune. It's like this new flu pill. Medical doctors are reporting that natural over-the-counter herbs are more effective at suppressing the virus proteins, but no, they're going to tell us there's a shortage and conservatively make $4 billion, and there's top people in the government that openly own stock in it, off making us have a run on this Canadian-made drug. I mean, I'm just, I want to sit here and warn people right now. There's a whole list of herbs that'll knock out the flu virus if you take it.
Well, let me ask you, if there is an avian flu epidemic in this country, pandemic worldwide, and they say, first of all, let's say they give you the voluntary option. I don't think they will. But would you voluntarily take the vaccine, Alex?
I'm going to show you on record. Nobody better get in my way of me and my family. We got property we're going to. And anybody that tries to stop me is going to be going up against somebody who's in the right, and somebody in the right, you can't stop them. You know, it's the old Texas Ranger saying that somebody in the wrong can't keep a coming against somebody who's in the right. And I've talked to like.
I guess that means you're not going to take the vaccine.
To boil it down, number one, the doctors are saying that the military can't quarantine it. It won't work. This is nothing but a power grab. A congressman, a Republican, is saying this. It's ridiculous. The military, because the way they bunk and their hygiene, are always the first to get really sick from this stuff. It is nothing. Why is everything martial law now? Oh, there's been a flood. Martial law. Oh, terrorists are going to attack. Martial law. Oh, the governors would follow federal directives. Why do they need this power to federalize everything? This is open dictatorship, and I don't even mean by Bush. I mean by the military industrial.
Well, you know what's funny, though? Remember 2-3 years ago we talked about the Model States Health Powers Act, that this thing would be going through Congress, and I don't think it got enacted totally.
No, I'm going to be frank, George. You talked about that, and I think you got one of the biggest shows in the country. You decried that. And they ordered all these medical workers to take it. None of them took it. Epidemiologists and virologists went public and said it'll actually give you smallpox. It doesn't protect you. About 10 states passed it. They couldn't get it passed, so it was passed in Homeland Security in 2002.
But one of the provisions was that they'd be able to quarantine people if they didn't go along with the program.
Bush signed the executive order expanding that, 6 months ago?
And by God, that's what they're going to do.
Boy, it's just magical. Years ago, they set this up, and magically they say it's, and George, as you, as I heard you say last week, they don't even need anybody to actually get it. They can create fear and go, maybe we've got a case, maybe we've got some cases, or they can just announce they've got some cases and lock this society down. You know, why did Tommy Frank say a year ago at Cigar Aficionado, the head general, oh, one more attack, we go to martial law, the military's going to run your life? I mean, why did Secretary of Defense Cohen say that in 97? Why has – I made films back in 99, George, where I videotaped our troops.
I'm going to do an Insta poll here on Fast Blast, simply on Peak Oil. Those of you who have a computer – give me that. We'll have the results by the end of the next hour. The question is, peak oil, do you believe it, yes or no? Now, of course, the definition of peak oil simply is that we're peaking out of oil. We're running out. Do you believe that, yes or no? We'll take that Insta poll on Fast Blast, and then when we come back with Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson in just a few moments, we'll go to the phone calls. It'll be your turn. Well, I've gotten hundreds of Fast Blasts in on our Insta poll. I'm going to cut it off now already because, let me tell you, the results are just absolutely astounding. The question was peak oil, yes or no? And if it was yes, that means you believe there is peak oil, that we're just running out of oil. 92% say no. They do not believe in the peak oil theory. 92%. There you go, Alex. There you go, Paul. They believe you. Alex, what do you think of that? 92% of the people participating in this Fast Blast Insta poll do not believe in the peak oil theory. 92%.
Well, George, that trends with the data I get. I mean, frankly, we get even higher numbers. I mean, I listen to your show four or five times a week. I can't stop myself, lose sleep. But I hear your callers. I mean, they call it with common sense. You mentioned common sense. I mean, when they're shutting down refineries and buying them up for two, three times their value and then just closing them, I mean, this is crazy. They go buy profitable refineries all over the country. I've got a bunch of articles on this. And, George, they just shut them down. And then they blame the environmentalists. Oh, they're the ones. It's not true. We have their own memos. So if people will just check the facts, the confessions of these rascals, well, I think we'll get 100%.
Well, you'll never get 100%, Alex. You know that. You'll have one oil company guy calling in just to screw up the poll.
You're right.
Let's go to some of the calls. You can direct it either to Alex or Paul or both. We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes,
this
sir.
Is Rod from Santa Clarita.
Hi,
I'd
Rod.
Say hello to Alex and Paul as well.
Sure thing.
And I have a friend who's an auto technician, not a grease monkey, but an actual auto technician, who told me that it's a common knowledge amongst auto technicians that about early 1960s, an individual created the water-powered car engine. And it's so clean that you can drink the water from the tailpipe. And that the oil companies paid this man a billion dollars, so they could copyright it and hide it to suppress the release of the this engine.
Well, it's like the ending scene of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they push the Ark into that big warehouse with thousands of boxes. And what I do know is that the Japanese and the U.S. have carburetors alone that get over 100 miles a gallon. That is industry publications, and we're talking about massive power under the hood. We are not allowed to have it.
About 6 months ago, our dear friend Morgus calls me and says that he's working on a pill that you could pop into some tank of water and it would turn it into hydrogen, fuel. And I thought good old Morgus was crazy. And sure enough, Alex and Paul, I'm on the website a couple weeks ago, and there's a couple scientists who claim that they have a pill, a hydrogen pill, that converts water to hydrogen, and you can use it for fuel, and they're working on it. Now, isn't that incredible?
It's amazing, and what the media will do is they will focus on the occasional hoaxer or the occasional person that, you know, doesn't have all their facts together, and then ignore all the peer-reviewed research. Paul, do you want to comment on renewable energy and the suppression of it? I know you've done research.
Yeah, well, there's a book called Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries. And that features mainstream newspaper articles from the 1920s which talk about this. But the interesting point that you mentioned, Alex, is the media perspective on this. It's interesting that I've seen several American sitcoms carried over here in the UK, which have characters who talk about water being used to power cars, and they are always portrayed as being crackpots. So it seems that there's some kind of an agenda to portray that alternative energy suppression as something that crazy people would say. And it's, if it gets down to the level where it's in American sitcoms, which is often the policy with propaganda placement as opposed to product placement, which we all know about, then it seems that the elite would be very concerned about suppressing alternative energy.
These are Danish researchers, by the way, Paul and Alex, who have presented this investigation of a way of using hydrogen fuel to replace traditional oil, and they're working on it at the Technical University of Denmark. The pill looks like a regular aspirin, and you just plop it into a tank full of water, and that's all you have to do. Isn't that something?
Well, so much of what the globalist controllers do is about monopoly. It's all about engineering a monopoly, whether it's water, diamonds, oil, information. Everything they do is geared towards that. So this open source technology that's plentiful is anathema to them, and everything they do is an attempt to shut that down.
First time caller line, welcome to Coast Around with us. Hi there.
Howdy.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My name's Chris from Texas.
Okay, Chris. All yours.
My question is kind of, I guess, for anybody that wants to respond. I got a paper route, and I'm feeling the crunch. But earlier you were talking about if we just submit, things like that.
Yep.
And conform. I kind of get the feeling, you know, I live in poverty, and I feel like that it's beyond any way to, you know, you can talk about it all you want, but you cannot stop what they're going to do. That's the impression I get, and that's the feeling I get.
Well, I'll say this.
You may be right. Go ahead, Alex.
No, go ahead, George.
No, I was going to say, you know, you may be right, caller, that you can't stop it. But you know what? Before we let it happen, at least we can let the world know what's going on.
Well, this is what's scary. I know that throughout history, elites get delusional. They think they're unstoppable. It's like Hitler, when he was losing the Western War, attacks the Soviet Union. And, you know, moves into northern Africa, into Tunis, there in Libya. They go crazy. You know, it's just like a diver deep down the ocean gets narcosis sickness and thinks he's on the, you know, king of the hill and dies. People up high seem to get this megalomania. And so they think they're invincible, and that's actually what scares me. Their systems are falling apart. They're losing total credibility. People wouldn't listen to me 10 years ago. Now I can't beat them off with a stick. Everybody's waking up. I mean, people I know that are in big business are going, yes, you're right. Yes, I've seen it. There's a renaissance. And so don't be hopeless, sir. And you may think you're in poverty, but think about somebody who might get one meal a day and who makes $500 a year if they're lucky in Africa. What do you make at $18,000 a year? I know because of the expenses here, you think you're poor and Madison Avenue makes you feel like you're not important. Sir, you've got the spark of the universe in your soul. You are special and you're not poor. You know what's going on, and that makes you richer than, you know, some of these kings who don't know their head from a hole in the ground. And so just because the elite have all this aplomb and all this arrogance, pride goeth before a fall. And what I'm worried about is they're so arrogant and so delusional, I think they've lost control. And I know their own think tank experts and their own minions are telling them they're losing control. They don't seem to be listening. And, I mean, the arrogance, just all the craziness we're seeing, Paul.
Well, yeah, we have to remember that. Who controls the media? The media are not going to tell us that we're winning because the establishment, the globalists, control the media. Top globalist insiders have told reporters that they, in essence, create their own reality. So even if the reality of, say, the situation in Iraq is obviously a turmoil, they think of it as a success. So when that's pushed onto the media, and then that is represented to the general public as the reality, even though it's a lie, it's a facade, then if you buy into that propaganda, you will believe it. But in reality, there is a renaissance. There's a widespread movement of people waking up to this information, as proved by the poll that George just took, which was 92% believe that peak oil was a myth, which fits in with everything that we're seeing with people waking up generally in the movement.
What about the so-called talk about we want to move toward hydrogen as a fuel system in 15 years? Is that hype as well, you think, just to kind of appease us while the oil companies still do what they're going to do?
Well, we have the evidence on that. These particular fuel cells are still petroleum-based, and they're connected towards a hybridized system. So that's basically like we've already got space planes, but they're still telling us our space program is the space shuttle. That, you know, that's like $600 hammers and $800 toilet seats. The money isn't really going there. So it's a stopgap. You know, we should have, you know, supposed hydrogen cars. Now they already have them. And there's so many other advanced technologies and just so many things that are already developed they could bring us. But again, that would destroy the monopoly of these big oil companies.
Let's go next to east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
In western Ohio years ago, they mismanaged an oil field and only got out about 30% of the oil. With these gifted men, and this all being public record, with modern recovery techniques, how many of the old fields in the world could be re-engineered to get some percentage more than they already got?
Paul, let's let you take that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that the Russians developed a technique using an instrument called the Underreamer, of which we have the images linked from the section we created on prisonplanet.com. And it basically works the same way that an oil filter works in your car. It eliminates the contaminated particles that make the substance of the oil more viscous. So whereas standard conventional oil drilling procedures fail in that they have no method of filtering out these contaminants, this Underreamer device serves that purpose. And if you can imagine it, the best way to describe it is a kind of giant Swiss Army knife burrowed into the ground, inserted into the ground vertically to the usual depth where oil would be pumped from the existing reservoir. And then it expands out horizontally, as would a Swiss Army knife, if you pulled out, you know, all the blades. So in doing so, it has the effect of penetrating the contaminated well walls and allowing fresh, uncontaminated oil to flow in. So in effect, you're creating a new oil well without having to drill a completely new one in a different area. You're just expanding the one that was already in place but had run dry due to contamination. So with this and other new technologies coming online, the standard of oil refinery can only increase in quality, but only if it is allowed to do so. And unfortunately, from the evidence we presented, the major oil dynasties are actively seeking to block that kind of technology.
Well, I would add this important caveat, coming from a family of roughnecks and oil geologists. People need to understand that that's played out wells or 100-year-old fields where they did do primitive drilling and then collapsed the structures or accidentally brought in salt water. You know, now they have ways to get more oil out or to drill deeper. But played out areas or damaged fields are only a fraction of the recoverable petrochemical reserves, fossil fuel reserves, or abiotic oil reserves. I'm telling you, folks, from personal experience, giant gas wells, giant oil wells, I mean, anybody in the oil business will tell you this, are capped from Illinois to Oklahoma, from Texas to California. I mean, they've got oil fields out there in L.A. owned by Al Gore that are only at about 20% capacity because, you know, when his daddy died, he gave him that big oil company. This stuff is literally, again, we're grounding in it. It's just like Alaska. 80% of the oil goes to Asia, and that's only a fraction of the production. That is admitted. They only allow a development of a fraction of it. They always blame it on the environmentalists and say they won't allow drilling. Folks, one party controls everything, and when the Democrats control everything, the same thing happens. They never get into that oil. That oil is to be left there, because if they did get into all that oil that makes Saudi Arabia's reserves look puny, then you'd be paying 50 cents a gallon for gasoline, and that's not good for the globalist. This is a world tax. The oil companies created the UN. They control our government. They control the EU. They control the puppet Arabs. That's well known, and it's simple. This is a world tax. We're already paying a world tax. This is how they confiscate our income. But more importantly, they print the money. It's about controlling us. This is about control. They cannot have a middle class. Their own handbooks say it. And if they can get us dependent on these resources, these energy sources, and then radically inflate their prices, they can then control the world. That's all that's happening. They're trying to stifle a renaissance. They're trying to stifle technology with this. But it's not going to work. They cannot stop human progress. They are destined to lose.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Alex Jones and Paul Watson. Hi there.
Hi, this is JR from Grass Valley, California.
Hi, hello, JR. How are you?
Yeah, this is where I'm really proud to be here because we're working on alternative fuels here.
Good for you.
And we also have some gas saving devices. They're going to be on the market very shortly, but that's not why I called. I went in the service station business for a major company. I bought a service station in 1964, 3-year lease, '67. I renewed, and then in 1970, when I renewed, they put a clause in my contract that I would only be able to purchase a guaranteed of 110% of my past sales, and I couldn't figure out why that was in there, and I was told then, in 1970, there was going to be a shortage, and that's why they put that condition in there.
They knew there was going to be a shortage.
1970. Yeah.
Do you think, JR, that it's staged?
Oh, I knew that. They knew that was coming, and I don't know if it was staged or not, but they knew it was going to happen.
Oh, listen, and believe me, you live in Texas around oil people. Believe me, it's well known that the 1973-74 oil crisis was just totally and completely. Listen, this is one of the main reasons. The dollar was being devalued then by Nixon. It was being devalued by about 30%. Now it's been devalued another 45% in another big jump in the last 2 years. So if the dollar's worth less, they've got to go ahead and jack up prices, not just for profit, but to bring it in line with this hyperinflation that they say doesn't exist. And so that's another big part of it, is that they have to give you a pretext or an excuse psychologically to accept the jack up in prices.
Yeah, I agree completely. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for being on the program. Here's somebody saw that 30 years ago, for crying out loud. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Oh, always appreciated. Gary, KSMA, 1240 Santa Maria.
Hi, Gary.
Alex, tell me if you're aware of this, that the independent Chevron and Shell dealers, at least here on the Central Coast and down in L.A., are being gobbled up by the corporate Chevron and Shell. There's five of them just in my little county area just in the last 6 months that Chevron has gone in and bought up, and they're making such sweetheart deals that the owners of those stations are making more on the interest, just the interest from the proceeds of the sale, than what they were netting running their service stations. They can't turn down the deals, and they've gone just right down the coast, gobbling up every independent Chevron and Shell dealer that there was. And that's obvious in preparation for something if they're so overpaying for these service stations.
Well, sir, you're absolutely right. There have been just scores of business reports I've seen on this right here in Texas. They are gobbling up everything because they have money to burn. They're making more money in the last 2 years they made in the last 10, and they're buying everything up in preparation for even higher fuel prices in the years to come. So, yes, you're seeing what a monopoly is like, not a free market, not a supply and demand, but a mass orchestrated raping and looting of the American people.
Stay with us. Final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast. Paul, tell us a little bit about your book, Out of Chaos, if you would.
Well, yeah, it's Order Out of Chaos. It presents the evidence that world crises are manufactured in order to provide the elite, the globalists, with the justification to then step in with the solutions that they had pre-planned all along. It goes through 9/11, the Iraq War, the Bilderberg Group, some of the secret organizations that steer world policy and world conspiracy, and it's available at Infowars.com, or you can read the book online and get all of Alex's documentary films online by becoming a member and subscribing at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Oh, hi. It's Jackie in L.A.
Hi, Jackie.
Always seem to get through when Alex is on. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Anyway, you were talking earlier about population reduction.
Yes.
You know, and did you hear about the Chinese? They've been doing seismic warfare, creating earthquakes.
Well, I know I got a call today, and I checked it. Anderson Cooper just goes on TV now on CNN and talks about weather control. I mean, George, we're in danger of becoming pretty mainstream now.
Well, no, I mean, because I heard a while ago, a long time ago, I think it was even on an Art Bell show, that earthquakes were created by the government by shooting off nuclear warheads.
Well, yeah, I mean, they talked about atomic bomb-triggered tsunami bombs and earthquakes back in 1946.
Well, yeah.
All I want to say, because you bring this up, is that it's encyclopedic. Secretary of Defense Cohen talking about it, and UN laws in 75, and K. Bailey Hutchison just, you know, got a law passed about weather control. So tectonic and volcanic and meteorological weapons are real. I just, because they're classified, we don't know the full extent of it, so I am not really the expert on that, though I do know it exists, and for people to say it doesn't exist is bad, so I commend you for bringing it up.
Well, Tesla created an earthquake years ago in the late 1900s by mistake, so it really does happen, so I just thought it was awfully convenient that they remember during the Iraq war and they had that big earthquake in Turkey because Turkey didn't want to join the war. I thought, my God, just this is so ironic. It just was so helpful to the Bush administration, you know. And then I thought, they could have done it.
But I don't say this to defend Bush. And Bush literally is a puppet, just like everybody's been a puppet since they got rid of Kennedy. And so when we talk, it helps the New World Order to always blame the figureheads. I like to focus on the powerful global systems that are behind that, these controlling capital conglomerates. And, you know, that's what Paul Watson's book, Order Out of Chaos, details. And I just wanted to add this one point about the energy crisis. We shouldn't forget Enron. I mean, we have a perfect microcosm of the rest of the country and the world. Enron brought congressmen to Houston and to L.A., and showed them fake computers with fake computer trading of energy and showed them a manufactured crisis. So they just told the public it's a crisis and sucked at least $10 billion out of people that were paying for power. But before they did it, it follows the IMF World Bank documents, they first would turn it on and off because people don't believe that and really value it until they turn it on and off. And so there wouldn't be too big of a crisis, they thought, if they had a few staged power outages. And that is documented, that they actually shut the power off over and over again before they started racking up increases in prices. I mean, people have gone to prison. This was staged. So Enron is a microcosm of what we're seeing now.
Paul, I was always perplexed at all the oil that they do take out of the ground. What replaces it? Because I always thought that ground eventually would cave in or we'd have more seismic events. And I assume if the theory's correct that it replenishes itself, that might solve part of that problem, huh?
Well, yeah, it would certainly head off any accusations of natural disasters which are caused by that process. If the oil is replenishing, then the subsurface would not be unstable for that to happen. On the subject of weather control that the caller raised, Vladimir Putin and the Russian annual military parade, he orders the Air Force in Russia to go up and absorb the moisture from the rain clouds.
Yeah, guaranteeing no rain for the event. Remember that?
That's reported every year in Associated Press, and that's just the public technology. Just imagine what it is 30 years advance, what we don't know about.
By the way, I would just add this. I have read reports by major geologists and petrochemical geologists and others. Water is what they believe is replacing 70%+ of the Earth's surface being salt water and then 1% being fresh water. Water, you know, that's what a geyser is where water goes down and is superheated by magma and then comes back up as steam and boiling water. But a lot of that water gets down into deeper areas, and a lot of the abiotic scientists believe that water over millions of years of interaction with different minerals and different stratas then forms some of the bases of the oil itself.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hey, Alex.
Yes, sir.
God, say you're absolutely awesome. You know, it's we live in totally absurd times. This is Tony calling from Hollywood. But it's really interesting to see now that, I don't know, George, you've noticed that on Hollywood Boulevard, they now have super bright lights.
Yes.
And they have signs all over it says, videotaping for your protection.
Yeah.
Hey, we didn't need this 20, 50 years ago. We didn't need RFID then. We don't need it now. This is absolute BS.
Well, let me tell you about RFID. The horrors you're hearing about isn't the tip of the iceberg. It is admitted Pentagon plan, MIT developed, that all these cameras and all this RFID is an actual official Pentagon plan from 20 years ago. Texas, we barely beat the law this year, but they don't care. TxDOT's already ordered them. All cars and the inspection stickers, without even having a law, are going to have, this is in Business Journal, are going to, in Business Wire, are going to have RFID little, it's a piece of tape inside your inspection sticker, and all the major roads will become toll roads. It's now official. People are freaking out in Texas going, my God, you told us about this 5 years ago. I was just reading trade publications. I'm telling you, everything is in the trade publications. That's where Paul and I live, is in these big trade publications, because the industries brag to each other. And not only will it tax you, as George said in the first hour of the show, it's all about money, and that's control, it also tracks you. And they're saying, TxDOT says in these bills, that when you speed 1 mile an hour too fast from point A to point B, they will automatically ticket you, and you'll get a ticket in the mail off your transponder. This is Orwellville on steroids.
I think nowadays when you were mentioning diamonds, Alex, you know, a 2-3 carat diamond ring, a nice one, $10,000 to $25,000-$30,000. What do you think it really should be worth?
We actually know. I interviewed the lady who produced, the interviewer, she's amazing, the Diamond Empire a decade ago, and they let her in, and it was giant vaults in France and other areas, huge warehouses just full of diamonds with the De Beers World Diamond Monopoly, and the diamond is barely semi-precious. And speaking of oil companies, they actually have a deal with them where they get to buy them at a fraction, around 1% of the cost they're sold wholesale for drill bits. And so you'll have a drill bit that diamonds, this is scientific fact, folks. I mean, even New Yorker magazine's done reports about it. Diamonds are semi-precious. Now, emeralds and rubies are actually precious. But diamonds, literally all over Africa, are laying on the ground. And we hear the term conflict diamond. Any African village, and this has been in mainstream news, tries to dig their own little hand-dug mine. The big diamond monopoly, and they bragged about it, I'll never forget that, April issue 2000, in New Yorker magazine, they brag they will send in giant Merc teams with dozens of helicopters and wipe everyone out. And then on the news, oh, we took out a terrorist training camp of conflict diamonds. And they're so arrogant, they actually bragged about it to scare everybody, I guess, in the New Yorker magazine.
First time caller line. Hello, you're on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, hi, this is Mark from Chesterfield, Michigan. I was in Alaska 15 years ago, western Alaska, where there is still a ton of natural gas out there that's just gone untapped, by the way. But I was in the Anchorage Airport traveling out to where I lived, and I met a geochemist out there. Again, this is 15 years ago, but he told me that we got in a conversation. He told me that there was a research project in, I believe he said Indiana, that It was an experimental station that was trying to drill through the Earth's crust, and the difficulty that they kept having is they kept running into huge pockets of oil and had to release the pressure on those pockets and had to change drill bits. It became so expensive because they kept running into pockets of oil that they eventually had to abandon the project.
Huh.
So my question is to Paul, have you heard of anything like this? This type of a project, and how far down does this oil go? Does it go right down through the Earth's crust, into the mantle, or, I mean, how does that work?
That's what the abiotic scientists have forecasted, that it does go right down into the mantle. And with that extraction of those deep oil wells, and this happened, I believe, in India as well, the simple pressure from the amount of oil that was literally bursting to get out was so magnificent that they did have to move on in some cases, because they were just overwhelmed by the force and the pressure, that it was actually dangerous to even drill an oil, refine oil.
Yeah, it snaps off drill bits.
I wonder if it goes down to the core. I wonder if it helps lubricate, for example, the area around the core.
We don't know, George. I mean, we haven't even explored our own oceans and our own mountains, so Lord only knows. All we know is there's so much oil that it's a joke. But all the big oil companies look for is the sweet stuff right at the surface, and they've got a big monopoly, as we've proven conclusively. And listen, folks, this isn't our claims. You know, the people that spout off the peak oil propaganda, they never back it up. It's just gloom and doom, end of the world, Chicken Little scenarios. If you go to PrisonPlanet.com, or if you go to CoastToCoastAM.com right now, that has the courage to cover this, and you link through, Paul and I have spent the last week in preparation. I mean, Paul's been spending hours every day, so have I, in really researching this. I mean, and you know what? We go into research trying to disprove ourselves. We debate each other. We, you know, we try to find experts that will disagree with us, and no one serious will do it. And so in our crash course, on top of our years of research, you know, our refresher course for this interview, we learned 10 times what we knew. It's like geometrically growing. We want to disprove this. You think I like knowing I'm being raped? You think Paul likes that? You think George likes knowing this? I mean, it's got to stop. This is a joke. And listen, it's not just about profits for these guys. This is holding back the development of the species. It's blasphemous.
Let's go to it's time for a call or two, and that's about it, because I want to give you two both time to once again give us some final remarks. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, is that me?
Yeah, it sure is.
Hi, this is Ann from Queens, New York.
Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
I think the question is for Alex.
Okay.
Yes, I've been noticing from New York that there's so many immigrants pouring in, not just coming in, legal or illegal, I'm not sure. But with the open borders like from Mexico, we have that more than 10 years, and nobody in Congress wants to stop it. And it looks like the middle class already is being ignored.
Ma'am, the same Club of Rome and CFR documents that are public. I mean, even Lou Dobbs was reading CFR documents 3 months ago. I couldn't believe it on air. They say the same thing with peak oil. We got 6.5 billion people, only 290-something million here in the U.S., hundreds of millions want to come here, and this will knock out the middle class, regardless of what color you are. Again, it's a tool by that tiny 0.5% to annihilate the entire middle class, which will then decimate all of the small businesses in this country. And, I mean, it's already deindustrialized us. I mean, Ford and GM are on the verge of bankruptcy. I just heard them calmly announcing this on the air today. Like it's no big deal. We are being sucked dry. This is a plan. We have their own documents. We have their own confessions. They have sucked this country dry, and they haven't completed their mission. We can pull away from this spider now, but if we keep letting it whisper in our ear and tell us that it loves us, it's over. We've got to turn around, look it in the eyes. It's eight eyes. And see what it is. But the question is, do we have the will to face the full horror of what we're dealing with?
Explain very briefly, Alex, Club of Rome.
Well, again, people say, well, who is it? The CFR, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission. It is the same 200-plus people that literally man all these different organizations. And each organization has a different program. But some of the top economists and environmentalists and royalty are in the Club of Rome, only a few hundred members, and they openly put out plans and policies for artificial scarcity and neo-feudalist policies to reduce population. Paul?
Well, yeah, and the Club of Rome example is the Kissinger 1974 document called Global 2000, which was presented to the Carter administration. And that was basically a call for mass genocide, and again, underlying the creation of artificial scarcity, in this sense, food, in order to lower third world populations, which were damaging U.S. economic interests.
How did that document get out? I mean, that, to me, that's criminal.
It's declassified in the Library of Congress, and they don't deny it. It was declassified in 1991, correct, Paul?
Yeah, and there was national security memorandums on it. Which
and the genocide was going to be through starvation? That was the plan?
Yeah, artificial scarcity of food in the Third World. Kissinger called for that program to be initiated.
Amazing.
He also called for another one. If countries wanted IMF money, they had to forcibly sterilize half their women. Mm-hmm. I mean, George, we haven't posted. This is mind-blowing stuff, and that's why people really need to get Martial Law, my new film, or they need to get Paul's book, Order Out of Chaos, because it details the type of people we're dealing with. They're totally and completely ruthless.
And, of course, they don't care if the population's reduced from 6 billion to 500 million as long as they're part of the 500 million.
Well, that's what I've said. I've said they need to volunteer first. I mean, I don't want them to do anything to themselves. We hope they have long lives but and prosper, as Spock would say. But they need to, you know, if this is such a good idea,
well,
they need to.
You know, it's like Osama bin Laden, Alex. If he truly believed in his mission and what he was doing for his religion and his jihad, he'd be strapping bombs to himself. I don't see him doing that.
Well, most of these handlers never put themselves in harm's way, and neither do their masters and their controllers. And George Norrie, I can only thank you for your great courage having Paul and I on, and I hope people will go to InfoWars.com and get the new video or get Paul's book, because this information is absolutely vital.
Thank you, Alex. Paul, thank you as well.
Thanks.
For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisori, and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.